ICMA University is pleased to present this online program entitled From Relief to Resilience, Supporting Small Businesses During and After COVID-19. We are very pleased to welcome all of you to this presentation. I'd like to draw everyone's attention to the links box located on the left of your screen. To download a PDF copy of the slides or any item in this area, simply click on the link and a separate web browser window or tab will open so that you can view, save, or print. The webinar evaluation link is also in this area. You must be logged into ICMA University to access the survey from here, but you can also find it on your dashboard after today's program by clicking on the program title. It is my pleasure to turn it over to our moderator, Melissa Grainer, Director of Marketing at WiseHive. Melissa is a journalist turned copywriter turned marketer. While the job titles may have changed, the goal has always been sharing stories that engage, educate, and inspire. As the marketing director of WiseHive, she spends her days helping nonprofits discover the power of smoother processes, more flexible workflows, and stronger data reporting on their impact and eventually sharing their real-world, real important success stories with the community. Melissa, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. And good afternoon or good morning, depending on where you are. And thank you all for joining us today. Like she said, my name is Melissa Grainer. I am the Director of Marketing at WiseHive. I'm honored to be moderating today's panel discussion. To give you some background on how we all got here, WiseHive is a software provider. We offer a grant management solution to a variety of organizations. As you can see, we work with some of the traditional nonprofit types. But for years, we have worked with federal, state, and local government offices, including the CDC, the state of Arizona, Georgia Department of Natural Resources, the city of Denver, et cetera, mostly helping them run annual grant programs. But early this year, as COVID began impacting communities across the U.S., we really saw a small shift. Local government offices, local foundations as well, pivoting very quickly and trying to support their hometowns. We saw PPE grants. We saw medical research grants. We saw a large number of government departments trying to provide assistance to their local small businesses. So that is what today is really all about, how we can all get smarter about offering support locally and hopefully be able to work more proactively moving forward instead of being forced to be responsive. We'll start today with a look at some of the numbers and some of the trends that we've seen and how offices are responding. We'll then introduce you to our panelists who have been kind enough to give us a look behind the curtain and share their perspectives. And then we're going to wrap up with a look at what elements that you should be thinking about working into your future plans, as well as that open Q&A to the panelists for as long as time allows. So let's get started. It kind of goes without saying to everybody on this phone right now, especially at this stage of the pandemic, that small businesses have been some of the hardest hit by the COVID-related shutdowns. The number of small businesses open is down to about 16.7% right now. It's been as low as 32%. And as a result, small business revenue is down to 17.6%. It's been down as low as 41%, though. And while the country is trying to slowly reopen, it's clear that the damage has been done. City and county economic development teams are trying to determine how they can really help. That's not just with the CARES Act funding, but they need to address immediate things like lease bills, payroll, and start planning for the longer road ahead. Each of you on today's call really might be at a different stage right now. Perhaps you're still waiting for CARES funding to trickle down from your county or state. Perhaps you are in the midst of giving out that relief funding. Maybe it's already allocated and gone. But hopefully you're also realizing that this one-time cash handout thing is not going to be enough. It's not going to truly help the small businesses of your community. It's not a one-and-done solution. The trend that we're really seeing is that municipalities are preparing for the fact that they have to go beyond this initial wave of funding. They have to find longer-term solutions to sustaining their small businesses. To simplify it all, local governments are facing three stages on the road to truly getting their small businesses right end up again. This first group is still facilitating what we would consider initial relief, which is for most some form of CARES or state-allocated funding. Some towns are entering the world of fundraising now, trying to take in donations and expand or create new programs with that money in an attempt to give a little bit more. Some are earmarking funds for minority-owned businesses or those have been disparately impacted. Next, we're starting to see governments move on to a recovery stage. They're creating new programs focused on particular needs, like social distancing supplies and signage, or marketing campaigns to try and get people back into stores and spending money, helping these small businesses navigate the new requirements of this new normal. And eventually, we really want all local communities to start thinking about this resilience stage, finding ways to partner and provide not just funding, but support and resources to strengthen Main Streets and to build in plans that would protect small businesses during a second wave or another potential crisis in the future. This, I apologize, is a little bit of a long quote, but it really does summarize the current situation very well. Your communities are special in part because of the small businesses, and those businesses are vital. For them to continue to play their important role, they really need the help of local government. You are all in a position to contribute to their survival, and in turn, to the long-term health of your communities. So with that, I'd like to move on to introducing you to the representatives from two different governments who are in the thick of this right now and have begun to see some success. They work on two different coasts, but at least as it relates to helping small businesses survive, they have similar missions, and they have done some great work to rapidly respond to the immediate onset of needs and to figure out how they're going to continue to try and support recovery. So I am thrilled to welcome and introduce John McMillan and Doug Kinsey from the City of La Quinta in California, as well as Colleen Cardace of the Loudoun County Economic Development Department. So, John and Doug, I'm going to start with you. To kick things off for us, can you spend a few minutes just telling us about La Quinta, your small business community, and the challenges that you faced when you were quickly setting up relief programs, and the success that you're beginning to see thus far?
Absolutely. See, this is John McMillan, City Manager of La Quinta, and I'm here with Doug as well, and we'll be kind of going back and forth and sharing some of the information here together. Basically, the City of La Quinta is located in the Coachella Valley. We are somewhat sometimes known as the greater Palm Springs area. Tourism is probably our largest driver for our businesses. We have approximately 1,000 small businesses. We've got 42,000 residents, and during season, which is essentially November through April, we get another 10,000 to 12,000 snowbirds that come into our area. Definitely, it's hospitality-driven. We're located in an area where there's some great events in the Coachella Valley. There's the Coachella Fest, there's Stagecoach, we have the American Express Pro-Am Golf Tournament here, Indian Wells Tennis Tournament, the Parabay Open. So we are definitely hospitality driven. There's a lot of our income, our revenues, our TOT and sales tax, over 50% of our revenues come in through those two sources. So anyway, that's just a little snapshot of what the city is like. We actually have, it's kind of a disturbing fact from my standpoint, but I think there's 26 golf courses in our small community that is 35 square miles large.
That was a great overview of our city, John, and regarding the program, as you can imagine, as we discussed that over 50% of our revenue that's generated here in our city is basically hospitality driven. So when COVID hit, it was a real shock to the system. We can't tell you how difficult and scary it was, not only for us, but for our business community and our surrounding cities. And so we had to move quickly, and so we established a what we would call the economic disaster COVID-19 emergency economic relief fund, and that was a big long way of saying that we're going to roll out something that's economic relief for our local businesses. We wanted to target those that are going to be hit first and hardest, which would be small businesses. Thankfully, we have a economic reserve that we had built up, but we're also always looking to procure more funding, whether that's through CARES Act funding, through state funding, anything that we can do in order to help supplement so that we're getting money into the pockets of these businesses that need it most in order to survive. I'm not sure when we want to get into the nitty-gritty, Melissa, but we can describe how our program worked, but it was a very interesting and rapid approach to getting the program up and running. From thought process or inception to actually having it rolled out, it was a little over 2 weeks, and that was a very tough and tight timeline. So, you know, we were struck by COVID, and we had the official state order to shut down around March 19th, and we had our program already in front of council on April 16th, having contacted WiseHive and essentially figured out what we were going to do within those 2 weeks prior. So it was very interesting times, and we're very excited and appreciative that we have a seat at the table here to describe some of what we've learned and hopefully impart to other community leaders how they can assist their cities.
That's great. Thank you, John and Doug. And Colleen, I'll hand it over to you now. Can you tell us a little bit about Loudoun County and your guys' experience thus far?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me today. Loudoun County, Virginia is located in the Northern Virginia region, about 25 miles west of Washington, D.C. Loudoun County encompasses about 520 square miles, and our population as of 2019 was just over 413,000 and growing. I bring that up because Loudoun is unique in that we have kind of two main economic drivers in the county over a large physical area. Eastern Loudoun County is very much tech-based. We are the world's largest concentration of data centers. And we also have the metro line from D.C. coming to Loudoun, hopefully in the next year, though COVID has certainly changed that timeline, where we're building urban mixed-use developments along our metro. So a kind of growing urban environment with a heavy tech corridor. And then Western Loudoun is primarily rural and agricultural-based. We grow the most grapes and hops in this Commonwealth of Virginia. We have a large craft beverage industry with over 40 wineries. And we also then have a large agritourism industry built around those craft beverage businesses, equine, wedding venues that obviously were incredibly impacted by COVID. Loudoun as a whole has just over 12,400 businesses. And what happened when COVID hit is that we realized that the business makeup in Loudoun, though we are incredibly fortunate with our data center partners to have economic stability, over 7,000 of those 12,000 businesses only report 0 to 4 employees. And obviously COVID had a very big impact on all of those businesses. As a department of Loudoun County, our efforts are not just attraction-based, but we consider ourselves a full-service economic development department with small business and entrepreneurship, retention, real estate, and process development services, but primarily in targeted industry sectors. And so March 16th, when we were all sent to telework, we realized we needed to shift our priorities very quickly so that by March 17th, we had launched a COVID-specific website and resources. And our staff of 25 changed basically everything they were doing to business outreach aimed at our smallest, most impacted businesses. Unlike La Quinta, we did not know about WiseHive right away when we started to look at a grant, and so I'd love to share some of that. Is we went to our board in early April and asked to take money out of our existing incentive fund and do a round of grants for small businesses to try to do it quickly and effectively. And we did it in an almost entirely manual way using email and our shared drives. I'm not recommending this in any way, shape, or form, but we did do it. We were able to give $1.4 million in grants out on May 8th. And then almost immediately afterwards, we're notified that we would be getting CARES Act funds that would allow us to do additional grants. At that point, we went looking for a system. We simply didn't have the time to onboard anything in our original round, but realized very, very quickly that we needed to be more efficient. and we needed to be more nimble, and that the chances were that this was going to be a long-term program for our department as our priorities continued to shift. So we onboarded Y5 just in the last few weeks and executed a third round of grants just last week, bringing our total grants to just under 1,100 grants and about $6.8 million awarded. And I'm happy to go into more detail and answer any questions anybody has.
That's great. So I think we're going to go right now into a bit of a Q&A that I'm going to lead. So I'm going to ask you guys both some questions. You guys can just kind of speak in and kind of start a little bit of a conversation amongst yourselves, and we can see what you guys are willing to share. But it does sound like you both really had to pivot really quickly. I think we all kind of didn't see COVID coming, and I think a lot of governments really didn't think about the implications or didn't realize how big the implications would be. And as they're putting together these programs, you are realizing time is of the essence. And like Colleen said, you know, you guys tried to just do it manually because you wanted to get it off the ground as soon as possible. But you probably realized very quickly that there were some things that you just hadn't thought of. There were some things that surprised you that you didn't have, you know, the resources to handle. So can you guys both talk to the things that really kind of challenged you guys, the hurdles that you had to overcome and what you learned from all of that?
Sure. This is Doug over here at the City of La Quinta. I would tell you that off the bat, one of the most surprising things that we learned as we were attempting to implement this program, and I'm sure that everyone else would share this thought, is communication is key. And it's very interesting when you need to tap into your community during a time of emergency. There are a couple things that you have to think about, and of course, one is getting a message out that is clear and obvious and simple. And the other is making sure that you're tapping into the community leaders that can get that message out in a safe way and it's not misconstrued. And so what surprised us was when we launched our program, we knew that businesses were hurting, but when we tapped into our team of business leaders that we communicate with to get this information out and say, hey, you know, you guys need to be safe, we have this opportunity for you. It was a loan program for our initial process. A lot of them hit us back and said, we are dying out here, and we were dying, we were doing just great right before COVID, and then when COVID hit, it hit us so fast, so hard. Our rent is X amount of dollars, and we've already lost revenue where we can't pay for 3 months' rent. So we were shocked to learn just how swiftly COVID acted, not only as a literal disease, but also as virtually this disease on businesses that destroyed any potential of their survivability. And I mean, hey, we're only in June, and we've actually seen quite a few businesses, unfortunately, across the county shut down permanently. We're happy to report that here in the City of La Quinta, we have not had any permanent closures as of yet.
Yeah, I would echo the same, is that you think you know going into it what the needs are and what the struggles are in the businesses, but it's not really until you start talking. And I think we knew up front that we needed to have a program that was nimble and that we could change, but that's not often something associated with government. And so there was this constant play of, you know, wanting to be certain and give people certainty and give people a program that was solid and easy to understand, but knowing that it was going to have to change and adapt. We were going to have to listen and pay attention. And that poses a real challenge because you're constantly thinking about your responsibilities, that you're using taxpayer dollars, that everything you do is a public record. And so you want in general, you know, to have a program that that can be stable from the very moment that you speak about it publicly. But this crisis really doesn't give you that option. It changes, and the needs of the businesses change. And as John was saying, it hits so quickly. And one day a business is open, and the next day it had to close its doors. And if that happened to fall when bills were due, it really posed this gigantic problem of how do we be this sense of stability for our community in a time where there is anything but stability.
And Colleen, you mentioned before that you had tried to do things manually to try and get these, you know, things moving as quickly as possible. Can you talk to a little bit of the issues that you ran into there and what were the biggest things that your team just wasn't set or, you know, outfitted to really handle?
Sure. So, you know, the one thing that I give all credit to the leadership in Loudoun County, from our county administrator to our board, is that they never hesitated in telling us what do you need and we'll make it happen. So, but this was a challenge because basically we had to take a large number of staff in order to execute that program manually. Because what we did was we opened up the program. So basically what we did is for grants, we knew we wanted to do it quickly and effectively. So we kept the application period open for 72 hours, and then we took in the information and did an evaluation process. But because we didn't have a system on the front end where we felt we could safely upload documents, we were very concerned about crashing our website using our existing tools. We had 48 staff that over the course of 3 days called every single one of the over 1,000 applicants and had to work with them to get those documents emailed to them and then loaded into a file system that we had created on our shared drive. So while it looked really great on paper and it worked, at the end of the day we got everything, the back and forth with businesses, small businesses that were struggling with the technology to understand the financial information we were asking for, what we had planned as, you know, 3 days of phone calls really took a week, and we hadn't given ourselves enough time. So we were running our process. I was, I think, on the phone with our Commissioner of the Revenue checking licenses the hour before we did, within 10 minutes of when we were going live on TV to do a random drawing of the applicants. I don't recommend any of that. It's highly stressful. It was a lot of staff time. And then now, even though we've executed two more rounds since then, we're still sorting that information because of how manual it was. It's all sitting in folders by application number, and we actually, thank you, WiseHive, just loaded our first two rounds into the system last night to try to help us sort through that data after the fact. So it was a good process on paper. We executed it, but it was so labor-intensive that it really took a toll on staff. It took a toll on all of us because it's very emotional. It was a lot of long hours, you know, working towards a great goal and trying to do this really great thing, but constantly chugging along at it and trying to make it work. And so when we made the shift over to WiseHive, it was night and day in the process.
Great. So it sounds like, you know, I think there's no way to go beat around it. A lot of municipalities have really had to be reactionary with COVID. What has that taught you both about having a better plan in place before a crisis occurs? You know, kind of using this whole hindsight is 2020 thing, which I think has taken on a whole new meaning, actually. What have you learned, and how will this change how you plan for crises potentially down the road?
We'll go ahead and jump in again first. So I guess that's the order we're going in. But so one thing that the City of La Quinta wants to, you know, emphasize for other communities that have to go through something like this or will be going through something like this as well would most certainly be that you need to make sure that you have your chain of command and your people that you're going to communicate with in your community in place ahead of time. You don't want to be out there putting your feelers out trying to figure out who's going to help you, such as the property managers of these commercial sectors, the local community leaders that are going to be able to talk to the residents and essentially show that you care as a city and that you want your businesses and residents to be safe and cared for. And so the other side of it to think about is also that if this is hitting you at a time when it's most crucial, for us, when COVID hit, March is literally the big dollar month for all of our seasonal visitors and our seasonal businesses. We have the music festivals that occur, the tennis tournament that occurs, the golf essentially tours that occur impromptu. We have tons of items going on here in our little Coachella Valley in the city of La Quinta, and it basically could not have come at a worse time. And so we're always planning for the future. You know, we joke, we have the San Andreas Fault here. We think about the big earthquake that could hit. We're always thinking, how do we make sure that we're safe and we're ready? And you know, some things you just can't prepare for. And this was one of them where we went into this thinking that we were going to have a solution, and we knew it wasn't going to be everything. We were hoping it would be a Band-Aid, but we're still getting a lot of communication that people are hurting and that this is ongoing. We'll see what we can do, but again, it would be communication. And lastly, the other thing for anyone who's thinking about starting a program like this or thinking about just how they're going to assist their community, you know, we're in the business of economic development as well. And we had to think, when we go into this, how is our plan going to make sure that we capture raw and meaningful data in this new time that no one is ever going to see again, hopefully, and no one has probably seen before? Is knowing that when you're tracking your metrics, you can also plan ahead. If there's a wave two, if there's essentially another shutdown, a rollback like we saw recently here in California with just notice of bars being closed, we have to make sure that we're able to think ahead and strategically plan for the next time while we're in the trenches now.
One other thing I'd like to just kind of add to that is just having those reserve funds available. You know, we were able to deploy, from our perspective, our reserve funds a lot quicker from the standpoint we didn't have to wait for CARES Act funding. I mean, we're still thinking about going after that funding, and by being able to deploy those reserve funds, those are things that we can get reimbursed for when the time comes with reserve, you know, the funding that comes down from CARES Act or other sources. So, just having those funds available and being able to deploy them as quickly as possible and get them into the hands of the businesses that need them, that was really important and something that we were fortunate to be in the position to be able to do, and we'll definitely continue to make sure that we, you know, continue to have reserve funds strongly funded going forward and in the future.
And I would agree. I think the specific crisis couldn't be planned for in its entirety, but the one thing I think that helps and can be planned for is having a resilient team, having a resilient organization, an organization that is comfortable with change and uncertainty to whatever extent you can be, because it is crucial to adapt and to be able to move quickly in these times, and I think in any crisis, and I really appreciated the leadership throughout the county, from our Board of Supervisors to our county administrator, to say, what do you need? What are we going to do? But I'd also echo that reserve fund. Again, we tapped into an existing incentive fund and then went to our Board of Supervisors and asked to use it for this purpose because we knew it would be a while before we received CARES Act. When we did receive the CARES Act funding and they funded additional rounds of grants, one of the things that we did that goes to Melissa's point about recovery is they reimbursed that initial fund that was paid for out of department funds, but with a caveat that we come back with a plan for a recovery fund to use that initial, what was $1.15 million, and then our Economic Development Authority put in $250,000, but that $1.15 million would be for a dedicated recovery fund because I think we all anticipate whether it's a second wave or it's just the reality of you can't get millions of people reemployed and get businesses back up and running overnight, that we wanted to be prepared for what was coming next and be able to have those funds ready to go and not be scrambling. So I think that is key, is whatever you have, whatever amount it is, that it is there and dedicated to allowing you to be resilient and allowing you to be able to adapt to the situation. And I think I would also echo the chain of command comment. Knowing and keeping our chain of command fully apprised of what we were hearing, what we were doing, any changes we had to make, meant that our message could be clear and consistent across all channels. People are so scared and they're under so much stress. I mean, these small business owners, this is their lives. This is their life savings. This is, you know, the health and well-being of their families on the line. And so they're terrified. And they needed to hear a consistent message from all the sources that it was coming from. And that happens with clear and consistent communication. And I think that really helped us. And when we hit bumps, when we've had issues, everybody knowing who was running which piece of the program, who was making decisions, and knowing that we were all getting the same message, I think certainly helped us and would be something we'd use in the future if, unfortunately, we face another crisis like this.
And Colleen, you kind of just led us nicely into our next question here. You talked about how with this refunding of your initial money that the county had spent out of its own budget, you're trying to come now with a new strategy. So how
right.
are you guys trying to do that? What are you looking to do in the, you know, the next couple of months or potentially even year to provide really more long-term assistance to your small businesses?
Yeah, I'll start since I kind of segued into that. I think it's two pieces. I think there's a financial piece, which the understanding is twofold. Is there a second wave that requires additional direct grant support? Then that's there. But even more than that, we've been thinking a lot about businesses who weather this storm, but they need to maybe make permanent lines of business that they've added because of the crisis. So you're a restaurant who started offering take-home meals, but what you really need is a better deep freezer, or you need a better delivery truck, or cold storage, or whatever it is. If you are a small manufacturer and you need to reshore part of your manufacturing in order to solidify your supply chain for the event of another closure, you might not be able to go get traditional lending if you've just taken an EIDL loan or you have PPP or you simply don't have very stable looking finances, as most businesses don't right now. And so we want to be able to help. We want to be able to continue to listen and to adapt and to help our businesses as they go from the relief side, they go from the crisis into recovery. Now, how do I diversify my supply chain? How do I diversify my customer base to try to make myself more resilient moving forward? And we think that there's a real opportunity that goes hand in hand with our existing retention efforts to try to help our businesses do that. I think the area for long-term assistance is that, again, as a department, we've typically very tightly focused on a couple of core industry clusters, and this has really made us stop and think about, you know, what is our role as a Department of Economic Development in small business and small business assistance. And, you know, we've learned a lot about the stability or lack thereof in some cases of our small businesses, and are there needs in the community in terms of financial preparation and structure for our businesses that we might be able to help with?
Yeah, that was a great answer, Colleen. It's going to be hard to match that one. But regarding the long-term assistance that we're trying to provide to our businesses, we actually are really proud to say that we've been trying to pivot as we go. And so the initial program that we rolled out was a loan program. And that loan program was essentially saying, look, we know that you need to just try and make ends meet right now. And that was, again, that was during the crisis. That was the gut instinct, the fast reaction. But it wasn't long after that we said, okay, we really got to look at this recovery and resilience. We got to figure out how we're going to keep you guys open, and we're also going to help you help yourself. And so one of the things that we've been looking at was a rebate program. And the rebate program essentially says, look at the state-issued industry guidance for your business sector. So if you're retail and you got to put up some plexiglass and you're going, I don't have the dollars to pay my employees. I don't think I can invest in trying to COVID-19 safely reinvent my business. And we're saying, look, we really want you to adhere to the safety guidance that's being provided by the state, and we don't want businesses that are going to open up willy-nilly, try and make a quick buck because, you know, things are dire and they need to feed their families, but they do it unsafely. And so part of that program would be to say, okay, if let's say there's even a second wave, we know COVID-19 is not going away, how are you going to get your business up and running safely with the right items in place? And that can even be a conversion as well to an online store. We're seeing a lot of businesses that are reaching out to us saying, our customer base is gone. You know, again, we're tourism. We don't have the people here that even if we were open tomorrow could make a profit with. And we're pushing them to online resources that we are personally out exploring that are essentially free resources that can say, hey, we want you to convert your physical store into an online shop. We want you to learn how to telecommunicate. We want you to X, Y, and Z so that you can adapt to the new world. We always knew that brick and mortar was potentially going the way of the dinosaur. Residents really want experiential shopping, and they want, when they go out in the world, to experience something that's fun and interesting. A lot of people aren't going anymore to the grocery store for every little item. They've got Amazon, and they've got the ability to essentially do everything from home. And so it's thinking about not only that long-term impact, but also how we can prep them to reopen safely. Again, the safety is the aspect that, you know, again, if COVID-19 comes back with a vengeance and we really do see a wave two where California has to lock down again out here, or even across the country, we're seeing other states having to adapt. You know, we want them to be thinking ahead on how they can safely do so.
Great. And then I think, honestly, in the past, I think a lot of people have thought about the role of economic development as a driver, as an approach to moving a community forward in growth and income and opportunities. But right now, obviously, we're not focusing on new business. We're focusing on retention. We're focusing on survival. So do you think that the crisis has reframed the role of the economic development team and the responsibilities to their communities?
I can start with that one.
Go for it.
Thanks. I think, I think most economic development agencies were or should probably have been thinking about how economic development has changed before COVID. And it really is one of those areas that economic development is based on your community and what your community needs and where it sees itself going. And so I know for us in Loudoun, again, you know, that we made the decision as a county probably a decade ago at this point to really make the department not just corporate attraction focused, but to really offer additional services, ombudsman services and things like that. We have a full marketing staff and really, really expand that. I think how COVID has really changed is one of the things that I know we said early on when we went for that initial funding, knowing that those funds were traditionally for that outbound attraction efforts, we said that there is no outbound attraction effort if the quality of life, if what makes Loudoun a great place to put your company isn't there anymore, because we've lost our restaurants and our craft beverage industry, because we've lost that agritourism. So it really is so much more about being adaptable as an economic development agency, in my opinion, and being what you are, which is to serve the growth of your community and where they are and where they want to go.
You know, those are all great points that I think we all can agree on. Here in the city of La Quinta, we really pride ourselves on attempting to have a connection to our businesses. There is nothing that's more important than picking up the phone and making a human-to-human contact with those people that are in need and stressed out. You can't armchair this and send some emails and hope that it fixes everything. And so we've really taken on the role through this crisis, which has been nice. It's actually bonded us closer than ever as a community to look at how we can assist in the role of economic development and say, look, I know that before, you know, you might have been struggling, you might have been having difficulties. Tell us, how much is your rent actually? Wow, that's very interesting. You know, tell us, what was it like when you were in a normal sales brouhaha during the month of April and making tons of money hand over fist? Now, what is it like? And the role of how we can actually assist our community, it hasn't necessarily changed, but it's only been hyper-focused to say that you have to have a meaningful connection and people have to feel like when they pick up the phone and they want to call you because they need help, that you're going to be there to answer on the other end, or you're going to be able to return their message or just show something that, again, conveys that you really do want to help. One thing that I would note is that, thankfully, here in the Coachella Valley as a whole, we're a valley that's comprised of 9 different cities, and there's a couple unincorporated territories. you know, our relationships, not only with the county, but with our neighboring cities, has really helped us move forward through this crisis because, again, it's a close-knit community. And we look at it and we say, okay, let's chat about this on the phone. How are you handling that issue? You know, how, oh, that business type can't open. What are you telling your businesses so that we can make sure our message is uniform? And you don't see someone down the road saying, you know, well, Joe Blow's mattress store is open, but mine isn't. How is that fair? And you want to make sure that not only is your city and your residents and business community doing the right thing, but that you're united as a front with anyone neighboring or anyone else in your community.
That's great. Thank you very much, guys. So I think what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to add a little bit of my own two cents here and share some of the insights that we're actually seeing at Wise Hive internally as our government clients and other nonprofits, for that matter, are setting up their programs. Some of these elements our clients honestly learned as they went. Like you heard from Doug and John and Colleen, a lot of this was a learn-in-process kind of approach. But some of these are also some best practices that we've just learned internally and are trying to share with our clients to help them be able to set up as quickly and efficiently as possible. So every government is different, every department is different, and everyone's going to have their own preferences. But it really shakes out to these three big areas that can really influence the success of one of these kind of grant or loan programs. The first, really, we've been calling internally the citizen's journey. It's a fancy way of saying user experience. Put yourself in the shoes of the small business owners and think about how stressed and worried they probably are, and make sure that this program does not add to that toll. Make sure your application is easy to use, that there are confirmation emails, a place where they can see their status. Make sure the system you're using is secure and that you can is the place that are, you know, going to be comfortable putting in their financial information or any kind of other numbers that you might need for your program. The second really is stronger decisioning. This bucket is kind of about you, your internal team, and at the core, it's really finding the best way to share and review all this data that's coming in so that you can quickly and easily make any kind of approvals. Many of you will want different team members focusing on different geographical areas or industries. Maybe you want to set up an automated eligibility quiz so that you don't even have to look at half of the applications coming in. You may want to have certain checks in place to earmark a percentage of funds for minorities or women-owned businesses. Think about all of those things before you start putting your application together. Those are, you know, big things that will totally change how you want to approach your program and set it up. And the last bucket is simplified reporting. So the, you know, really depends on where your funds are coming from, but if you are coming from a state or a county where you've got CARES funding that trickled down, you probably have some requirements in terms of reporting back up to that entity. And you have to make sure that you have that data in a way that is easily pulled and displayed from the start so that you don't have to pull everything at the end and relook at it all again and do a horrible 40-tab Excel spreadsheet. But beyond even those kind of requirements, you probably want to consider how you're going to report back to your small businesses and the community as a whole. Are you going to collect reports from grantees to find out how their funds were used or get progress reports on how they're doing after a certain amount of funding? Are you going to promote back out to the community exactly how much was given, what was done with it? Do you want to show, really, what kind of an impact this fund made? And with all three of these things, really the key is to think about them as soon as possible into your planning so that you don't have to work backwards and you can really be as efficient in your work and your time as possible. So at this point, we would love to open it up and have our panelists answer any questions that you, the attendees, might have about your programs, relief programs, their lessons learned, longer-term support options, or anything else that you have a question about.
Thank you, Melissa. At this time, we will open it up for participant questions, and we look forward to hearing from you. As a reminder, to submit a question, simply type into the chat box area at the lower left side of your screen, and then be sure to click the Send button. Please note that your questions are only viewable to the presenters and not to other attendees. It looks like we've got a couple of questions that have already been submitted, so I'll go ahead and start out with the first one. How are you assuring that businesses use funds for federally approved purpose, and does the software help with this?
Colleen, why don't you take that one first, and we'll go after you.
Sure. So I think there's, again, we sort of pivoted and are now using federal funds. So our initial round, I'll be very, very frank, we said we just want to get cash into the hands of our small businesses, because at the end of the day, it's going to go to rent or it's going to get put food on their family's table, but either way, it's going to help them stay running. Our entire goal was stay open, keep people employed, and that was really, so we targeted our funds to working capital for our small businesses. They've had to certify what they're using the funds for. We're doing follow-up surveys for that to have them tell us what they use the funds for. But apart from that, we're not doing it in a way that they have to submit receipts to us or submit it and then we pay for it. It is a cash grant directly to the businesses. And as far as how the software helps with this, what it does is you can custom build your application to what it is you need it to track. And we found that incredibly useful. It can have as many or as few questions as you really need it to. It can take documents and keep it all in file. Just today for a FOIA request, I had to download somebody's application files, and I'm able to, with a click of a button, download everything from their application to all of the documents into a single PDF. Which is for reporting purposes, at the end of all of this, because of using CARES Act funds, I think that's really going to help us be able to answer those questions. I think we would all agree, though, up front, we've done our best to gather the information that we need and to be compliant, and we'll answer those questions as they come up. I think one of the I don't want to say downsides, but one of the things that we kind of all acknowledge is to do this quickly, we have to be confident enough that we've checked all of those boxes, because you can do it quickly, you can do it perfectly. It's really hard to do both at the same time. You have to be able to go back and adapt and ask for additional information, beg forgiveness if needed, but really just be adaptable and say, we've checked all the boxes as we understand them. I think the other thing is that CARES Act rules were still flowing when this all started. We were still learning what rules and regulations there were going to be. We were still hearing from the federal government when we launched. So we'll go back and gather data as we need it, I think is going to be our response.
Yeah, I think you put it excellently when you made that comment regarding doing it perfectly and doing it quickly. To, in a roundabout way, answer that question, what I would say is that when we started our process with WiseHive, we weren't really sure. We knew what we wanted to do, and we weren't really sure how we were going to translate it one-to-one regarding questions for the loan program, questions even for our newest rebate program, on how we were going to get the right information we needed off the bat. And it was certainly, we knew going into it, going to be a trial and error. And what I would comment on is for those that are interested in doing something similar, and if you're thinking about how you're going to keep your businesses accountable, that they're not just taking those dollars and pocketing them or using them for something else, an example of how we've been conducting this is our rebate program, because it's a reimbursement essentially for our local businesses. Even though it's not funded through federal funding, we're thinking of it in that light, because this is our residents' money, and we want to make sure that we're very responsible with how we utilize these funds. So we're having them submit through the software digital receipts or photos of receipts that are legible, before and after photos of their product installation. We're also giving them a call up on the phone to discuss how the buying process went. And if we see any discrepancies, we take time out of our day to give them a call and just say, hey, we're seeing this. We wanted to clarify. We have had, as Colleen mentioned, a couple stumbles where we've said, you know what, we're just going to have to give you a call back and ask for forgiveness, that we need more information, because a lot of people will submit on these applications and think that they're done. And we go, we're really sorry, but we need you to send more information because what you provided wasn't sufficient. So again, I would just say that yes, the software absolutely does have the capability as you design it to comply with those types of tracking or requirements, but it also is a bit of a game of give and take, and you have to work with your businesses and your residents because, you know, you can make it flawless. They're still going to struggle themselves. These are crazy times, and I'll tell you, they're not thinking off the top of their head, how do I make sure that I get my financial statements in order when they're trying to, again, feed their family or take care of their employees.
Thank you. And the next question, did you have to hire any staff to roll out of any of these programs, or were you able to make do with the current capacity? If you did not hire anyone, how much staff time roughly has it taken to manage one of the grant loan programs?
I can start there. I think it's really that's going to be a specific locality question, right? I mean, how big is your grant program? How many businesses do you have? But we did not hire anybody. We used existing county staff, but I will tell you, I went and begged a couple of other departments to help us. So our department is a staff at 25. We had four of us and then six on the last round that were considered the core team with full access to the in the last round to the WiseHive platform with full access to the internal documents the first time. And then, as I mentioned earlier, it took 48 staff to do the calls in the first round to about 1,100 businesses. And we executed it from approval to drawing in about 2.5 weeks. I'd say that those 48 staff gave us 3 to 4 full working days, and then our department has been basically nonstop grant work, that core team particularly, for about 2 months straight. So it's a lot. I don't want to sugarcoat for anybody. If you are considering doing a grant program, depending on the size of your program, how much you're asking, it's a lot, and I would never want to tell somebody differently. We didn't hire, but I will tell you that as soon as we started advertising our program, we started getting emails from companies who wanted us to hire them, staffing agencies and the like that could help us. But to something that John said earlier, really important for us was that there was a human element, and this is an opportunity as an economic developer to connect with the businesses. So we were pretty adamant that it had to be county staff, it had to be personal, and it was going to take a lot of hours and a lot of staff time, but it was well worth it from all angles to do it. But I would certainly say whatever time you think it's going to take, you should probably double it.
You know, I love what you said there, Colleen, regarding the human element and how when you went into this, you were thinking about how your staff is going to directly connect with the business community, because that is also how we looked at this. We did not hire any additional bodies. And I will just say right off the bat that it takes a village. In other words, it was quite the team effort. There was no single one person who was carrying the load. It was for us, to put it into the context for those who are probably thinking about doing this for their community. Again, we had about we have about 1,000 small businesses, and we had the anticipation that about 500 to 700 businesses would be applying. That we would imagine was going to be the load or the brunt of how we were going to deal with this program when it launched. Okay, and we have a smaller staff. Our city is less than 100 employees, I believe, at this time, and essentially, what it took was all departments to really look at it and say, who can provide assistance? You know, our finance staff is just amazing, and they basically looked ahead of time and said, listen, here's what you need to look for ahead of time in order to streamline things down the road. And that is what we want to encourage for anyone else who wants to try and do this program. You know, I won't lie to you guys. I myself worked from a 5 a.m. to a 10 p.m. a couple days in a row just to make sure that we got everything in on time. You know, we had a lot of people that were putting in a lot of overtime, a lot of weekends, a lot of fun times. But you know what? It was extremely rewarding because during the first round of awards, when we had businesses coming in to pick up their checks, we had a couple that literally cried saying, thank you so much. You know, we really needed this assistance. We were struggling to get our EIDL or our PPP loans in, and you guys are helping us bridge the gap so that we can just keep our doors open or at least, you know, put food on the table again. So I would look at this from a, not only is there a manpower aspect, but also that when it comes to staffing, don't, if you can, don't hire on or outsource. You know, try and make sure that your close-knit team that's going to be interacting with these businesses day-to-day are going to be your actual staff, because that's all about building relationships, and this is a perfect opportunity.
If I can add to that, because I think this really bears discussion, if you're going to do a program like this, keeping that staff, that core-knit staff in mind and their well-being is so, so critical. It is a difficult process. I mean, you are talking to people who are in just dire, dire need, mentioning people crying. You're going to get people who are crying for all reasons, because they don't qualify and they can't get funding, or they got funding and you've just actually saved their business. You've paid their rent. You've paid the insurance on the trucks they need to deliver. It's very emotionally trying. It's incredibly rewarding, but take stock of your team's mental health and the time that they're putting into it. I know that we did daily check-ins at the end of the, we talked all day, every day, using, you know, I think we practically broke the county's go-to meeting platform during these processes. But what was really critical was doing a debrief at the end of each day and just talking about how did it go? How are you feeling? What are you doing this weekend? Are you going to be able to take some time off, or being able to, you know, tell when things were getting tense and say to a staff member, you know, why don't you go take a walk, take some time away, we'll come back to it later. I would echo a lot of late nights and early mornings to make sure it all got done in the time that we had advertised. But that core team, now I can say very, very confidently that core team, the people who worked on this process, they understand Loudoun better. They're better economic developers because of it. They have a sense of running these businesses, what that takes, what that means. Their connections have grown, even in positions that maybe not we wouldn't have traditionally thought of as having a role in this, like my meeting and events planner. Her repertoire of caterers and restaurants and spaces is, you know, three times what it was before this, but she knows them, and she knows them as people, as human beings. And it's been a lot of fun, actually, to have staff reach out after we've done a drawing for more grants, and they want to know about the businesses they talk to. Did so-and-so get a grant? Oh, my gosh, I'm so happy. Can I call them? You know, never have we all wanted to hug people more in a time where we're not allowed to hug people and really get that opportunity. So to echo that point, if you can at all do it with the staff that you have, it will make all the difference in the world.
Thank you. And we have another question here for you. How does your municipality plan to deliver continuity of services next year with significantly less revenue available from tourism?
Go for it, Colleen.
Sorry, I was muted. So Loudoun's in a unique position. Right now we're kind of holding steady. The county made a decision very quickly, very early on, to hold back about $100 million in revenue in anticipation of reduced revenue over the next year. We don't think it's going to be quite that dire a shortfall, but obviously tourism has a large impact. I don't know that we will have a significant impact to our government services from depleted tourism funds. Again, we're very, very fortunate that one of our industries is booming because of COVID, and that's the data centers providing all of us the ability to do these webinars. So I think that continuity of service across county government will be something that the county will keep a very, very tight eye on. But as of right now, we've been very fortunate that we haven't had to make cuts to staff. We haven't had to make cuts to programs. We stopped all net new hiring. But I think end of year tax collection will probably tell us more about that.
Yeah, and out here in the city of La Quinta, where we are unfortunately not having a booming sector because we do not have a lot of tech jobs out here, which, by the way, if anyone's listening to a tech world, come on over. We're happy to have you. but for tourism, we're looking at it as how do we convey not only to the business community but to the tourist industry that when we are ready to reopen, that we're going to do so safely. And so what we're seeing is a communal or a collective action that's showing that the hospitality industry is taking COVID-19 very seriously. We have a local initiative that's called Take the Pledge, and it essentially is for all hubs of tourism, such as hotels, to say, we take the pledge that we're not going to reopen unless we can do so safely, and we can ensure that anyone that is staying is going to have every precaution taken. So there's that aspect. The other side is, I'm sure this question was also asked because it's just a fact of life. Again, I know that we had mentioned earlier that over 50% of our annual revenue comes from tourism. We cannot emphasize enough that if you have not already done so, make sure that you're planning on a contingency budget, a reserve, some sort of plan or thought process that says that we need to weather these hard times, because frankly, we're not sure when it's going to rebound. You know, we weren't sure at the beginning of this if those major tourist drivers, such as the Coachella Music Festival, Stagecoach, the tennis tournaments, the golf tournaments, we weren't sure if those were going to happen in the fall. There was actually rumors that they were going to occur. And then we heard, unfortunately, that they were going to be delayed until next year. And so it's one of those realities where you just can't hit your wagon, essentially, to any sort of pie-in-the-sky dream that, oh, yeah, don't worry, it'll all come back in the fall, or it'll all come back soon. You have to always be thinking of, I wouldn't say a worst-case scenario, but a safe scenario that says, all right, well, let's say that that does occur. How are we going to weather that storm?
Thank you. And your next question, what support is available to small businesses when grant funding is depleted?
I can kick that off. I think it's multi-pronged. We were very adamant up front to talk about our grant program as one prong of our small business support, because we knew there is no scenario in which we have enough funding to fund every business. We want to fund as many as possible, but there's just not enough funding to give funding to everybody. So before the grant, during and after, we have been doing a dedicated business outreach program. And some of it has been we took one of our staff members in the office, and he became an overnight expert on SBA, EIDL, and PPP, working very, very closely with our Small Business Development Center to try to help as many businesses as possible, especially in those early stages, get their documents and their applications ready for those programs. And then we also use some of our research staff to try to find as many other programs as possible. There was a Facebook grant that included one of our areas as an eligible geographic area, so we tried to blast that out. There's been a couple other small funds that have become available across Virginia that we've tried to emphasize. And then, so we primarily used our COVID-19 specific website for that, pushed a lot of people to that site, to those resources, because we knew we weren't going to have funds for everybody. And then now moving forward, you know, we're continuing to do that business outreach, looking at whether or not any funds will, other additional funds will become available, but we'll continue to work with our Small Business Development Center to offer any other tangible support that we can, whether it's taking, the SBDC counselors maybe sitting down with a business and helping them go over their finances and figure out what they can do, or how much money are they really going to need to put in, as Lakinta mentioned, be able to put in plexiglass or add additional PPE and hand sanitizer stations. And, the county has also some other programs that are meant to help with those specific needs. And we recently got a donation from one of our sister cities of masks. And so being able to provide those as well, I think, is where we see that going as our grant funds run out.
Yeah, and for us, when we look at it, Again, we did a loan program initially. We did two rounds, and then we converted to a rebate program because we really want to get the money in the hands of these businesses so that they can do some real good, and when they reopen, that they're doing so in the safest capacity possible, and we want to show that we support them. But the reality is we are constantly scraping every portion of the internet and talking to all of our connections, talking to our local leaders, both elected and those with expertise. And we're also speaking with the county, and we even are trying to do outreach to neighboring counties in the state where we say, look, we know that everyone's in the same boat. What are you guys doing? What's a creative solution that you can think of that can help get these businesses the critical funding they need to stay alive? For us, what we are also trying to convey is we are not the end-all be-all. And, you know, I think, unfortunately for Colleen, they're in a tough position where they're the county, and I wouldn't venture to say that they're going to say, just look at the state only instead of us. You know, they've got cities within their communities that need to, you know, it goes down. They need to also show leadership and do what they can to help their local businesses. Well, it's the same for us where we're looking up the chain and we're saying, hey, we want to keep you in constant communication, local businesses, and know that the county has a couple programs that they're offering. We also are pointing them towards state resources. We're even pointing them to private resources, particularly for those that are nonprofits. And we're saying, there's grant funding out there. And if we have a close connection or we're able to chat with someone who's offering a grant, we'll immediately forward that to our local businesses and say, please jump at this opportunity. So we definitely don't look at it as though La Quinta is the only source or savior for them. We've even done research regarding what banks are offering what to who. And we just try and make sure that, again, information is being disseminated in the right ways and that everyone is aware of all of their resources. A lot of the times, people think that if they try once and they fail, that that's all that they have. And you should not underestimate the resilience of the business community. They really are going to push themselves because, you know, this is when rubber hits the road.
And our next question, are you including nonprofits in your small business grant making?
In LATAM, we got asked that pretty quickly, and our business interruption fund grants have not included nonprofits. Again, initially our funds were department funds that were dedicated for for-profit businesses, but when the county received CARES Act funding, they did implement a fund specifically for nonprofits. That I believe uses the block grant component of the CARES Act. I'm not as familiar with that program. It's run by a different department, but that was difficult, and we did hear from a lot of nonprofits, particularly in April, that were hurting, trying to offer services to people, but also as a business hurting, and we had to make that difficult decision that it was for for-profit businesses and keep assuring them that as soon as the county was able, they would. And so now they're running that nonprofit grant program right now.
Yeah, and I'll keep our end short and sweet. For the loan program, no, we did not allow for nonprofits to apply, but we were directing them to resources that could assist them. And, of course, our community is very passionate about our local nonprofits, and our electeds actually said, hey, we really got to explore how we can open this up. And so when we reopened our program for the rebate portion of it, we encourage nonprofits to go ahead and do whatever they can to get reimbursed for whatever they had to spend in order to comply with COVID-19 safety.
Thank you. And we have one more question in the queue, but we do have a bit of time left. So participants, please take advantage of this time that we have and submit your questions, and we'll try to answer the remainder of them. So the next question is, La Quinta mentioned the importance of collecting data during this unprecedented time to learn from. What data are you collecting, and how do you intend to use it moving forward?
Sure. So something that I want to, if anyone's going to be doing this program, something that I know that our city thought of from the beginning was, all right, if we're going to be launching any sort of program, we're going to be having people apply through a software program, this is also an opportunity to collect data, okay, and establish metrics. And there's a large swath of information that you want to collect. And one of the ideas is also that, you know, for FEMA reimbursement and other things, you want to be able to know just how impacted your community really was. I would venture to guess that out here for our city and our industries that our cities run on, we really got hit hard. I mean, this could not have happened at a worse time for our community. So the metrics and data that we collected are very interesting, and it's just some out-of-the-box ideas to think about. Is we looked at what are the actual reported rental rates or mortgages that some of these properties are paying as compared to what should be market or what they claim to be. And it's very fascinating because I will tell you right now, we've had a few businesses that we've seen and our jaws have dropped regarding the costs that they unfortunately have to pay, and we understand the burden that they have to shoulder. We're also collecting data regarding, for those who do apply, what steps they have taken or what best practices they have implemented for their business. And it was a very exciting and interesting portion of it is we offered in our application process, if you are a business, this was in the earlier times of COVID-19, if you are a business that has tried to make your business safe for reopening before there were industry standards or guidelines, submit some photos. Give us a call and give us a walkthrough or a virtual walkthrough if possible. And with that information, we were able to confidently pass this up the chain to the county and to the state and show that we had local businesses that were clamoring to reopen, but they were able to do so in a safe way, and they weren't just going to let people in and, you know, breathe on each other and not be safe or anything like that. So, again, the data that you can collect is wide. There's the numerical data, and there's also just the raw data of knowing who in your community are real leaders and who are really trying to show that they have what it takes.
Yeah, I would echo all of that. I think when we started talking about what data we wanted to collect, we started with what's our criteria. What's our eligibility criteria, and then what do we need to make sure that they meet that criteria? And I think that's going to be unique to each locality, what you decide you want to set. You know, how many boxes are people going to have to check to be eligible, and then start there and say, okay, so then what do we need, and what would help us make that the determination? We had a revenue cap, and then you had to show loss. So how do we do that? So we asked about rent and mortgage payments as well. We also asked when leases were expiring, if they were renting, because we wanted to have a sense for how was the real estate community going to react to this, and are we going to suddenly see a lot of people vacating spaces? But then also, if leases start expiring while the crisis is still happening, what's that rental rate going to look like? Is that pendulum going to swing too far the other direction with real estate companies trying to gain back some of the revenue they've lost, but pricing businesses out of the market? It also helps our retention manager know, hey, if a lease is expiring, that's an opportunity to try to help keep them here in Loudoun. Financial information, structure questions about the business, and then we also asked some narrative questions about, you know, what the impact has really been. We just wanted them to tell us their story a little bit. You know, how has COVID impacted their business? What have they been doing to get through? And then we asked what they would use the funds for. How would they use this, and what would it be for? And overwhelmingly, it was rent, mortgage, and payroll were the overwhelming responses. And then kind of tertiary would be equipment, supplies specific to safety. So that really helped us direct other resources as well. Just in that first round, getting that feedback. As Virginia made decisions towards reopening, we launched a campaign similar to what LaQuinta was talking about called Loudoun is Ready on safety guidelines. And actually, we go into phase three tomorrow. And so I just got a text from my marketing person that the phase three guidelines for all the industries have gone up on the website. We're asking businesses to take a pledge. And then we provided marketing materials, social distancing markers, banners to help boost consumer confidence. But really, a lot of what we decided to do in that marketing campaign came directly out of what we were hearing from the businesses through the data we collected. And then there's there's the reporting data, I would say, that WiseHive has really helped us do so much more effectively, which is I can tell you exactly how many businesses in our program now were LLCs for sole proprietors. I have a much better understanding of the makeup of our businesses and you know, where they are in kind of the life cycle of a business as well. And so that really helps us report back out, but have that contact information so that we can keep having those discussions.
You know, I just wanted to add, because I think Colleen hit on a couple very good points, and we had a similar approach, but we did have a little bit of a spin on the marketing side, which is, and this is something for all communities to think about for their businesses. We're having an interesting world that we live in right now where, you know, like it, hate it, it doesn't matter. There are policies that people have to adhere to. And when the cities are showing support for their local businesses, it goes a long way. And we've had a lot of, in this metrics or this data that we've utilized, again, and it is very easy through the WiseHive software on Zengin, we have had the ability to look at that and say, okay, we know that this many restaurants are going to be reopening soon and that they need something that shows the city's logo or some sort of formal support from the city that endorses that when you go into that restaurant, you need to do whatever that business says. And, you know, this was at a time when masks weren't necessarily mandatory. And if the business said, no shirt, no shoes, no mask, no service, we would send them a notice that essentially said something they could put in their window. And it says, yes, we support what these businesses are doing. We want you all to be safe. And so that's just another aspect to think about is when you're collecting this data, you really learn who wants to participate and be part of their community, but also needs your city's assistance or your city's backing.
Thank you. We have had a follow-up question that just came in. How did you balance the data collected with the simplified approach?
That's a great question because I think I try to think back on, you know, those, I'd love to say days and weeks that we had to plan it, but it really was like a day. And it really was about the system makes it simplified for you, and I really will emphasize that you can get the data you need without it being complicated by being smart about the questions that you ask. And then the format that it's asked in helps. So, yeah, if you were to count the total number of questions, it might seem like a lot, but it's basic information, and it's asked in a way, and through the WiseHive system, it looks very simple. It was completely embedded into our website. And then from a data analysis standpoint, I think that's the other thing everybody who's considering doing this should take into account is that it doesn't end when your program ends. I think we'll be analyzing data for a very long time. And we were analyzing as we went too. So having people who were monitoring that data and monitoring the system and trying to keep a handle on what was coming in as it was coming in so that it didn't all build up. But I think we asked for a lot of data, which would lead you to believe that it wasn't simplified, but the manner in which you ask it and the system that you use can really help keep you in that simplified approach.
Yeah, I agree. You know, for us, one of the most interesting, this is something that I would convey regarding how you're going to build your application or work with this software is we had a couple of people that assisted us, and I actually got very close with one of the WiseHive techs that was assisting us. That, I mean, we were on the phone probably every other day looking at how we were going to make the software business friendly and how we were going to make sure that when implemented it was going to be user friendly, because we had the other side of it, which was the review aspect. And our review aspect was with a ad hoc committee that was two of our council members, two of our financial commissioners, and our finance commissioners, and two of our city staff. And we wanted to make sure that we had the best objectivity in order to do that review, but we also had to think of the end users, both from a you know, a council member and also from a business owner. And so you know, when we were attempting to get that software up and running and make it work for us, and we had metrics that we were trying to hone in on, we really had to do a collaborative effort. And so it was a very enjoyable experience, and I will say that When it comes to the customization, you should feel good that if you need to customize it to get a certain piece of data that's emphasized, you can do so, which for us was a very important part of what we're doing right now, which is, again, for our rebate program. If we want to issue that rebate, we need to make sure that people have proof that they've done what they said. So we make it a requirement that you can't submit your application unless you've submitted receipts or you've submitted photos. So it's, again, it's a very interesting and detailed process.
How did you go about setting up the system and tailoring the application so quickly? Did you have technical help?
Dedicating staff to getting it done. And it sounds really silly, but it really was, this is our timeline. We've made a commitment to be out by this day, so however many hours it takes us to get it done, that's what we did. But did we have technical help? Absolutely. In our first rounds when we did it manually, outside of our county DIT department, no. When we onboarded WiseHive, there wasn't a single question that went unanswered or even idea. We would reach out as we were building it over, really just a couple of days and say, well, would we be able to do this or what happens if this? And trying to think through if, something happened with the application or with the review process. We had three tiers to our process. How would we handle that? And they answered very, very quickly, were with us, and made particular care to be with us on launch and to be on standby when we launched our programs. Because, again, we kept our grant program open for a specific amount of time, and so we knew it was critical that it launch when we said it was going to launch and that it would close when we would say it would close, and that anybody who had technical problems in the middle had immediate help and support. And so that required staff being on standby, but the WiseHive staff was absolutely phenomenal in helping us prep it and then being by our side during those particularly critical hours where we were getting a lot of traffic.
There we go. Yeah, I would say that regarding the testing and launching it, again, I referred to how WiseHive worked with us through the process, but the other side is that internally, when you're thinking about the end user, you have to make sure that you do a trial and error. And so from literally something as simple as just doing a dummy run and pretending that you're a business and you're attempting to upload documentation to actually having it on your website and making sure that the interface is user-friendly on mobile, on web platforms, and you have to think about, Chrome, Mozilla, Firefox, Microsoft Edge, all the different browsers. It all works, but you have to make sure that you're thinking of these little technical difficulties. And so what I would advise would be that you at least have a day or two lead-in that's reserved just for making sure that everything's technically savvy or working. I would also say that while the process wasn't painful, it wasn't painless. And so, you do have a few tweaks that you have to make here and there. And the good news is if an item isn't required, for example, on your application, you can go in there and you can make modifications.
And presenters.
Yeah, I would echo definitely. Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say I would echo give yourself a day or two of peer testing. However much time you can buy yourself, that's absolutely critical that you be able to test run it. And if this helps anybody, because it was one of our stumbling blocks, was we thought we had tested all of our possible browsers and applications only to find out when we launched, and this was actually in our first round, so this is nothing WiseHive could have helped with, that our own VPN was blocking the redirected URL to our site. So while there weren't necessarily businesses who couldn't get to it, we got immediate phone calls from our board of supervisors and department heads who were checking it when it went live who couldn't get to our site on our own county VPN. So if that helps anybody, make sure you've checked your own system as well.
Thank you. And presenters, that was our very last question. Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up today?
I think that is probably it, and we are coming right up on time, so that worked out very nicely. I just do want to take the opportunity really quickly to thank John and Doug and Colleen for taking time out of their busy schedules to share their experience and insights with us all today. If you did not get an opportunity to ask a question today or something comes to mind after you get offline, all of our emails are on the screen right now, and everybody is very happy to answer any questions one-on-one. There is also a link to our website at wiseside.com/ICMA if you want a quick picture of the workspace that Colleen and Doug and John have been referencing. You can get a quick video there to see what it actually looks like. But thank you all for joining us today, and it's been a really enjoyable discussion, and I hope you guys have all learned something.
And with that, we must conclude today's webinar. A special thank you to our presenters and to everyone who joined us today. Please take a moment now to complete a brief evaluation of today's program by clicking the evaluation link to the left of the screen. Your comments and suggestions are important to us as we plan future events. The survey must be completed in order to receive a certificate for this program. You can also access the survey from your ICMA University dashboard by clicking on the program title once you're logged in. Thank you for your participation in today's webinar. We hope you will join us again soon. Today's program is copyright 2020 by the International City County Management Association with all rights reserved. And this concludes today's program. You may now disconnect.